Hi.
Not playing musical chairs?
Yeah.
Only in an Al-Anon meeting, right? Okay. Good evening, everybody. My name is Laureen.
Hi.
Grateful member of Al-Anon. And now, I want to explain what this meeting is going to be, involved with. We have two couples, AA and Al-Anon couples, that are going to be sharing with you this evening. And they're going to be sharing on the steps. And they don't know what step they're going to be sharing on, so it's going to be spontaneous. So, I have the steps in here. They're going to draw one and share for about 15 minutes. We're going to be able to give them about 15 minutes. And what I'm going to do, folks, we're going to start on this side, but I'm going to give you a little sign that's going to tell you to wrap it up. That means you got about a minute. Or do you want a five-minute warning? I can give you a five-minute warning and then a wrap-it-up warning. So first we're going to start with Marshall. So if you would like to draw a lucky number. You go. Draw a number. I'm not peeking. Okay. And then, so you'll get to have about 15 minutes, Marshall. So this is Marshall.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marshall, and I'm an alcoholic and a member of the Garden Grove Thursday night men's stag group. And I announced that one time. Can they reset my time? Okay. Wow. My name is Marshall, alcoholic, and I'm also a part of the Thursday night men's stag Al-Anon group, and I've been going there for a while. And a few years ago, Ann and I were at a meeting in Huntington Beach, and I announced that. And after the meeting was over, a lady came up to me and she said, "I'm hard of hearing. Did you say the Thursday night men's drag group?" I go, "Yeah." Whatever. I'm going to focus on the chairperson right now for inviting my wife and I here to participate and share our experience, strength, and hope. And the participation sometimes I think is there's sharing, carrying the message without saying too much. Also, there's they pass the basket sometimes, and you put in what you can, and that kind of thing. But I also feel, and I feel that right now, that there's another kind of basket that goes around in our groups, and that's that spiritual basket there. We can put whatever we have, because every single person in here is a participant, and you don't have to say a lot, and you can feel that, and it's spread around, and what a good deal, what a good deal we have. Wow, guess what I got? I got step four. Okay, step four. Wow. It's been a while since I did a step four, and that all involves what it involved finally with me was to sit down with a sponsor and go and light a candle and go through everything, that the ups and downs of my life, which are fairly entangled because I had to separate the Al-Anon from the AA part a little bit, and it was it just took a little bit of time but it's part of the it's the process of recovery. So I'm gonna ditch that for a second and go back in time to not necessarily before I was born, but well, maybe so. I was born in Canada, and one of our sons, when his wife was pregnant, would sing to Sarah's tummy, and when Madeline was born and she was upset, he would sing. And so I got a little bit of that, I suppose, with my mother and dad, who were alcoholics. And so then I was born, and so what my life took was a series of being the oldest person. I was the breadwinner when I was 8 years old for all my brothers and sisters, and ended up at the at a place called the Youth Guidance Center, and there they told you to stand on a line and turn your head and count. And I shouldn't be there because I shouldn't be there, right? Prior to that, my stepdad said to my mother, "Shirley, I'm going to take off now. You and the kids will do fine, but I don't know what I'm going to do with the chump." You know, and so our life became chaos. And so, but it was really entangled. So doing a so anyway, getting here, I have to go through how I got here. So I'll start with well, I don't know where to start really, but at age 16, I was living with a group of people in Sacramento, and my family moved down here, and I got to condense everything real quick. So I got into trouble, and my mother informed me that my last name was really not my last name, and that I had a father that lived up in Canada, and because I was going to go to be incarcerated for what I did, because somebody blew my car up and they wouldn't pay for it. So I had a new engine put in, and then I wrote a check on it. You're not supposed to do stuff like that when you're 16. At that time, my mother worked at Angel Stadium, and the announcer was this guy called Phil Petty, who was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she informed me that my real dad lived in Canada, and the judge, you're going to go before the judge, and he's going to say, do you want to go up to Canada or go to California Youth Authority? And I'm pretty smart. Anyway, you get a picture of the life. You get a picture of the chaos and all that kind of stuff. So to sort it out, so here, and then my next step is to where I met Anne, and that's the family decided in 1974 to open up the world's first non-alcoholic nightclub in La Habra, which they did. They bought an old building that was very old, made of bricks, and it was called the Sportsman's Lounge, but the local people called it the Toilet. And I was still drinking like crazy, and they spent a year fixing it up, and then all of a sudden one day with the local newspaper there, they got it, you know, they wrote a story, and then the Times did a story, and the next thing we knew, we were on TV every day, and it was a big deal, and the Canadian government wanted to franchise this across Canada and stuff, and I thought that was great. I was still drinking, and would go back into the storeroom and move the beans. I knew the beans were up here, and I moved them and drink whiskey and go back up there and share with people what a great deal it was. But I also got sober, and at that particular time, I wanted to check out, and so this is my story. So I drove a truck. I wanted to drive a truck across the freeway and just end it. So that's the misery here. That's the state of mind I was in. And so at the last minute, and again here, with the readings and stuff, there was something happened, and I flipped the truck over and didn't go across the freeway. And my brother and I picked the truck up, and anyway, I didn't die. And so, but we were still involved with the, you know, the non-alcoholic nightclub. So I was, that's where I met Ann. We had dances there and different speakers and that kind of stuff. But anyway, I got sober and didn't realize I also was a member of Al-Anon before I went, because Ann said, I said, when do you think, what do you think? And she said, well, when I first met you, I thought you needed Al-Anon anyway. So anyway, I get sober. This time it's different. I got sober when I was 16, 22. I didn't learn my lesson. I climbed back into the ring with the bottle and got beat up again, and was basically standing outside the ring saying, have you had enough? And the bottle said, no, I haven't. Please step back into the ring and I'll show you the steps. And so, anyway, then I got sober this time for the third time, and it was a little bit different. And I knew that I had to stay close to the program. I've never not been, in my years of sobriety here, I've never not been in a book study and a step study. And so I was reluctant to trust anyone. And so at the Anaheim Alano Club, there was a person there, and his name was Ed. I won't mention his last name, but he had a store called the House of Humor. And he became my sponsor. I trusted him and did a four-step with him and went through the process. And one day Ann pulled me aside and said, I have something to tell you. What is it? Ed has asked me to run away with him to Mexico. I didn't know that Ed was part of a major, like, whatever group he was in. He was in a different kind of group and stuff. And so, point is that it kind of got to me a little bit. So, you know, I had to get a different sponsor. And through the process and always be involved in the 12 and 12 and that kind of thing, things changed. And I went from doing this, I don't care, you guys will be spiritual and all that kind of stuff, but I'll be sober and miserable, and that's about it. And so and I wasn't about to budge on the spiritual part of this at all, because, you know, I'd done just fine my whole life. Then we got married, and then we had children, and then we named one of our sons Aaron, A-A-R-O-N. And he later on said, man, I had a really tough life, because when I drank and stuff, there was always that AA there. And so he was an orangutan and went out and was doing his thing at age 16. And I had a friend in the Anaheim Police Department. I said, he is just nerve-wracking. And so, 1 minute?
Two.
2 minutes. Okay, so... So anyway, the spiritual part of this, then one day I said, okay, I'll consider it. And there was a chink in the armor. Aaron was out living with the heroin addicts in the Santa Ana Riverbed, and he came home. And Ann would always go to a Wednesday night meeting up in Huntington Beach and then go to her sponsor's house. And so I was building a tree house with my daughter, and we heard a sound. I looked over the alley, and there was our son, Aaron. And he said, "I want to come home. I'm ready to come home." And it took all my courage to say, "You know what you have to do." Mm-hmm. So I have like a few seconds. So I was ecstatic, but I was the weak link because Ann had much more Al-Anon than I did to be able to. I would take him to places and give him money and go. I just took him to the Connections house and I gave him money. How dumb is that? But anyway, it was when they had no cell phone, so I knew she was at Gloria's house. Gloria really liked me.
She did.
We fought one time, and I knew I was right. I knew I was right, and she went to the meeting, and she came back, and I was just prepared with everything to prove all my... I had a whole big case, and this is what Ann did when she came in, because Gloria said, gave her some advice. She went, "Stop in the name of love," and went, "How can you fight against that?" But anyway, I called Gloria's house, and I said, "Gloria, could you put Ann on the phone? Because this was like a miracle. He was back, you know." And this comes from a person that is like didn't believe in any of that stuff. And so Ann gets to the phone, and I said, "You won't believe what happened." And she said, "What?" Oh, she said, "Aaron came home." And so she said, "Aaron came home," and I said, "How do you know that?" And she said, "I was in the meeting, and a lady reached over to me and took my arm and said, 'Your son's coming home tonight.'" Those are just one things, you guys, of the gazillions and gazillions of miracles that happen. Thank you for inviting me, Diane. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Marshall. And next is Ann to come up, draw a step to share on.
A step to share.
A step to share on. Yeah. I'm Ann.
Hi, Ann.
Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Thank you for asking me to be here. It's a pleasure, and it's also, like, stressful. But when I was reading the pages, I mean, to me, it took me a long time to really understand how insane I was. And it's only through really looking back on my behavior and everything that I can really say for 100% sure that I was probably certifiable insane. Mm-hmm. I came into this program extremely angry, extremely untouchable. I couldn't hear anything, couldn't process the program. I was 19. My husband was drinking and very violent, and I was too young to follow him or chase him or try and stop him from drinking. I had no idea that that was the problem, because I was the problem, because he told me I was, and so did my whole family. But, you know, I had no self-esteem or self-worth. I had no boundaries. I had no sense of what a... how to live my life. I just wanted to find somebody to take care of me, and did not understand that that was a problem, because the people I picked were violent. So, you know, I didn't know how to live in life, and I didn't know how to take care of myself in any way. So, you know, I was pretty insane, but I stayed in this program and slowly, very, very slowly, got the idea of what the women and men in these meetings were talking about, what the program really means.
how it really works. And today I can say that, you know, I had to start practicing that came to believe. So it's came to believe that a power, I've come to believe that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. And I had to repeat it over and over again to myself, the first three steps, to really be humble enough, because I didn't have any humility. I had humiliation, but I didn't have any humility, and I didn't have any self-respect or compassion or kindness towards myself. It was always looking through the book when I would read it, and it would be all the things I was doing wrong, and I would underline all the things that I was doing wrong. Not, you know, what I was accomplishing or achieving or what my good points were or any of that kind of stuff, because that didn't mean anything to me. It was what I was doing wrong and how do I get rid of it or pretend like I don't have it or, you know, whatever. So it's been a long journey for me in this program. It didn't come easy, but I have started a collection of what my sponsor calls always be curious about how God is working in your life. And so these little things happen in my life, and I've started to write them down and you know, think about them. And one of the first ones was when Marshall and I went into business together. Before we did, while we were dating, but not really dating. This woman used to say, alcoholics don't date. <You know? laughs> And I imagine some of them do, but we didn't. We went out and drove in the car, you know, at midnight. And so we stopped in front of this little building, and it was empty, and we had started doing like t-shirts in his parents' garage, and so we were like, for his non-alcoholic restaurant, and so we were looking at this building, and we were going, man, it would be cool to have a little t-shirt shop here, because they had put a deposit down on the restaurant next to it. So months passed, and he was looking for a job, and he found this advertisement to go into business with a t-shirt shop. Drove down and parked right in front of that building, and there were t-shirts in the window, and there were, you know, he went in, did a handshake, and we started working there. And the address was 2922, and he was 29, and I was 22. When Aaron was 16 and he was living out on the streets, and he was, you know, just doing drugs, and he said, you know, we should take care of him and fund him and over that. And I said, well, you wanted to run away from home. You wanted to be a man out there, so you get to take care of yourself. So he was gone for 2 months, didn't know where he was, and I had gone to my Wednesday night meeting, and this woman came up to me, and she goes, your son is home. And I said, no, he's not. And she said, yes, he is. I had a dream that he was home, and he came home, and he was standing at the back gate, and he asked if he could come in, and you said, no, you have to go into program, and you have to go into a rehab. And he's home. And I said, no, he's not. So when I went over to Gloria's house, her husband said, your husband called. And I called, and he said, Aaron's standing at the back gate saying he wants to come in. And he said, you can't come in unless you want to go to rehab. And Aaron said, yeah, I'll go to rehab. And so it's like these little things that, you know, we call coincidences or synchronicity or those kind of things. The other night I was watching Empire of Light, I think it was called, the movie. And I'm sitting there watching it, and the Disneyland fireworks are going off. And she goes, the young man and woman look at her and say, hey, you want to go out dancing with us tonight? And she goes, no, I think I'm going to stay and watch the fireworks. And so, you know, it's always be curious. And it's not until I was ready to surrender to being a human being and having flaws, because I didn't want to have any flaws. But it was not until I was ready to say, you know, like, I have flaws. I don't know what to do with them, and I don't know how to get out of this hole that I'm in. I started to move towards having a saner life and saner mind and saner thought system. But it took whatever it took. I had two violent relationships. My father was a violent, abusive in every shape and form. And I was submissive in my first marriage, and I was a yeller and a screamer in my second marriage. And I had program, and yet I still didn't get it. I still didn't, you know, sink in, because I thought that I deserved to fight back. And I fought back. And it wasn't until, you know, like one day, whenever there was a knock at our door, we were having this knockdown drag-out fight with the kids, and he was yelling, I was yelling, and there's a knock at our door, and it was the police. And they came by and said, hey, we can hear you three houses down. And, you know, it's those seemingly bad things, seemingly, that turn out to be the good things, the seemingly good things. And it's not until, you know, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and got sick and tired of being angry, and got sick and tired of just fighting, that, you know, like I put my tennis racket down, which is what they used to say when I came into program. Just put your tennis racket down and stop fighting. Stop playing the game. And, you know, recently, almost 10 years ago, I fell when I was in my third semester of my master's program, art program. It was my end of my bachelor's program. But I fell, and everything in my life changed. And I had to stop school. I had to stop, you know, this. I had this idea of what I was going to do in my life. And I had to quit because I couldn't. I had hurt my shoulder so bad that I couldn't carry my canvases and I couldn't drag my art supplies and all of that kind of stuff. And during that, through that process, I started going to physical therapy. And then I had these, you know, cute, darling, wonderful little grandkids, three little ones, and my son decided to move away, and it just broke my heart. Because they were like this thing that filled my heart. You know, you go over and you see these little kids and they just make you feel so good. And I had like this horrible reaction to it. I cried all the time, and I tried to get my husband to move to North Carolina, and he wouldn't do it. And I got very mad and upset. And so he moved to North Carolina, and I was down at this bookstore, and I found this book on happiness. And I started reading this book on happiness. And then through the physical therapy, I started doing acupuncture, and I started doing some PTSD work and for all the abuse. And I started acupuncture, and I started meditating and deeply meditating. And so the seemingly bad situation, you know, helped me to grow towards sanity, towards loving myself, towards having compassion, towards being kind to myself. And I've been in pain for 10 years now, and on varying degrees of pain. And so that's another thing, you know, about having compassion for other people and getting rid of that old ideas of, you know, I'm separate from all of you, because we're all together. We're all part of this. So about 40 years ago, whatever, I wanted to have another child, and so I had tried all of these things, and I had tried, you know, different things. And Marshall and I decided one day we were going to do these glass mugs, because we do, like, we put decals on mugs and everything. We decided we were going to do that. So we put these we were involved in this organization, the Orange International Street Fair, so we put that logo on it. And all right, this is my wrap up. And so we put that logo on it, and we put it in the kiln, and it melted. And so we had a fire in our shop, and we were out in this, in our shop's in our house, and so we were out in this mobile unit, and this person came by, and they saw the mug, and they liked it, and they thought it was wonderful. And during this time, I had done, like, the GIF procedure and the embryo implants and all of this kind of stuff, and nothing happened, and I was praying daily, you know, thy will, not mine, be done. And so, anyway, went to Washington for to his parents' house, and we were there, and they were like, oh my gosh, we have this gift we want to give to you. It's just like fantastic gift and everything. And they, you know, would go to swap meets, and they would go, you know, pick up stuff and give it to you as gift, you know. And so I was like, okay. And so I opened up this gift, and it's that glass mug. So they had bought it because we had had a fire and it was melted and it had the Street Fair logo on it. So, you know, to me, it's like, it may seem like little things, but hey, always be curious about how God is working in your life.
Thank you, Ann. Okay, so two down, two to go. Now to my left, we're going to start with Mike. Pick your lucky step, Mike.
Okay. Step one. I don't know about step one. I really had to think about it. We made a decision. Oh, yeah. My name is Mike. I am a grateful alcoholic. You know, I would like to welcome anybody that's new to AA or Al-Anon, and thank God for the old-timers. You know, we admit we were powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. And, you know, I go to several meetings weekly, and I've met a lot of old-timers. You know, my sobriety date is November 6th of 89, and I never knew in my wildest dreams that I would do this for me, you know. And I always say that in the beginning of when I share or I speak at a meeting, and I'm not a circuit speaker or anything like that, you know, but when I'm asked, and this is some of the stuff that comes from the old timers, you know, when we get asked to be of service, you know, if you're going to speak somewhere, wear a suit, you know, and it goes on, you know, and the old timers, I always, you know, welcome the newcomer and the old timers, because they shared that language of the heart. You know, there's help here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, you know. And so I would hear them, you know, with that. Probably in early sobriety, I was so messed up that I didn't want what they had. There was too many old men in there and old women. You know, I'm too young. I can't be an alcoholic, you know. But I got to Alcoholics Anonymous with four DUIs. And I had my wife, of course, and a son and daughter, and there was already four DUIs, so it wasn't looking good. But coming here and listening after on my fourth DUI, I sat and listened, because I remember hearing an old timer talk about hitting bottoms. You know, we get to the program when we hit bottoms, or we get to the programs when we're sick and tired. And I believe that fourth DUI, I was tired. I was like, I spent money on lawyers and restitution, paying for cars that I hit or fences, whatever I did. So I could relate with it, you know. And I think what they were sharing was to have an open mind, you know, and to read the big book and to get a sponsor, you know. And those were, at the time, not important for me. But as I grew in the program, I found out that it was so important for me. And all I do is, you know, what was freely given to me, this is how I pay back Alcoholics Anonymous. Not only do, you know, that I'm service for carrying things at the AFG convention for my wife, you know, help out doing something, attending the meetings that are here, you know, but I mean, I get involved with the SoCal convention, you know, and I do sponsor men. My sponsor's Bill Riles, and he's from the Covina Group, the 502 Club, the capital, sobriety capital of the world, as they call it. And, you know, through my 33 years of sobriety, I've experienced a lot of good things, you know. It goes both ways, you know, because I've heard here in the meetings that, you know, either it's slow sobriety for me, you know, and it has been, you know. Maybe I'm stubborn, I don't know. There's some resentments, or not resentment, there's some character defects that I just hang on to. I like it. I like to get in trouble. She'll straighten me out. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. But, you know, it was hard. It was hard. I was in the Marine Corps, and for me to admit defeat, surrender, no way. You know, and just the way I was brought up, you know, men don't cry. God's going to punish me. I'm going to go to hell for saying that. And it goes on and on, you know. But it was hard. It was hard. I remember. It was hard to admit it. I couldn't believe. How could I be an alcoholic? But, you know, I remember the old timers talking about, you know, and it talks about it in the big book, in the 12 and 12. You know, our experience, our past, what am I looking for? The past, what I've done in the past, all my damage, you know, is my best assets. You know, and I put that from looking at the past, then looking at my life today, and I'm saying, oh, that's what they were talking about. So, you know, I'm able to relate with that. You know, but it was hard. It was hard because you know, I didn't want to give up the drink, or I was on a little marijuana maintenance. You know, I didn't think weed did me anything. You know, get me a DUI. Might have forgotten a lot of things, but they said from the neck up, you got to be sober. So, you know, it's sobriety. You can't take nothing. So, yeah. But, you know, working with my sponsor, we have a Monday book study. There's five or six of us there. And Tuesdays, I'm in Montebello. Wednesday, it's date night with the wife, and then Thursday I'm back in Montebello, and Friday I'm at the Covina Group speaker meeting. Saturday morning I just started a new meeting at the TNT in Whittier, and then I do the HOW meeting at St. Hilary's in Pico Rivera. And you know, anytime I'm asked to, like I said, to lead a meeting somewhere or speak somewhere, I'm of service. You know, I have to look at my calendar and you know, be of service. But before I forget, thank you, Diane. You know, it's been an honor to be here to share with you ladies and men, you know, that this program does work. You know, my wife is a member of Al-Anon, and you know, I remember an old timer from the Covina group, Waterfront Mac. You know, he would always, when I've heard him share in the past, you know, he would say, be kind to your wife. You know, and these are the things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, my old behaviors and my old habits, you know, and the sponsors that I've had in the past and the sponsor that I have today, they've told me, you know what you have to change, right? And I know the answer to it, but I want to see if this sponsor is going to be different. I don't know what. Everything. And I go, that's what I thought. But, you know, this is a beautiful 12-step program, you know, both Al-Anon and AA. You know, my wife and I have been doing this, you know, because I know because of this program, you know, we've been married 40 years. We just both retired. You know, I retired from the county road department with 35 years, and she retired from the county with 43 years, you know, and that's, and I believe that's from, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous again, you know, and Al-Anon working in her life and our relationship. And, you know, we do have a son, you know, I'm proud of him, that he has 18 years of sobriety and he works a good program, you know, and my son recently got married a couple of weeks ago and his wife has 2 years of sobriety. I have a daughter that's a normie, you know, and some great grandkids, you know, they're beautiful little kids. But again, you know, thank you everybody. I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, last but not least, guess what step you get, Emily?
Four.
No, we already got
four. I'm sorry, three.
You betcha, baby. You want to check and make sure that's what it says?
Okay, let me check.
Let's be sure.
Step three.
Surprise!
The whole time I'm sitting there, I'm going, I know I got step three. I know I got step three. And she asked me, and I say four. It's because I can relate to Marshall. That's right. Hi, my name's Emily, grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. Thank you, Diane, for inviting us to share our experience, strength, and hope at this early bird meeting. You know, AFG convention is very dear to my heart. I love AFG, you know, and you know, just coming here, just being here, just, you know, being a part of this year. I told Diane I'm going to sit low, I'm going to lay back because it's my last year of work and I want to retire and I'm just going to not serve in this year. And she says, okay, it's okay, I understand. And then, of course, you know, once I told her I retired, then it was about carrying the message, which is amazing. I can do that. But I just want to thank you, Diane, thank the committee, thank the ladies here. Thank you so much, both of you, for your share, and Mike. You know, step three, you know, make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. You know, early on in my recovery, that step, it wasn't a difficult step, but I think the step at the last line where it says, as we understood him. You know, I'm so grateful to this program and to this step because it helped me regain and find a deeper relationship with my higher power. It helped me, whom I choose to call God. It helped me see that there were many things early on, even in my early years of marriage, that I needed to turn over to God. But, you know, honestly, God wasn't working fast enough for me. You know, I got to this program, I'm so grateful, March 14th of 1988, and I will be forever grateful to, and some of them are in here, to the San Gabriel Valley group, Helen and Lisa and all these ladies who are here, and you know, and my very near and dear sponsor from way back when is in this room today. And you know what, the longer I'm here, the more friends I make, and the more I see that these friends I make in this fellowship are more like family.
And they're much closer to than my own family. And for that, I will be forever grateful. You know, making the decision to turn my will over started early on in my first month, my first year of Al-Anon. You know, I continued to go to one meeting a week. Because at that time, my kids were 11 months old, and my son was 6 and a half. And thank God for Elatine and Elatot, because that's where I took my son at that time. But I kept going to that one meeting a week. And, you know, the ladies loved on me, and they took care of me, and they allowed me to cry. I'm not, some of you might remember, I think I cried, and I did it this morning at the past chairman's tea. Because I speak from the heart. I truly believe because it comes from my heart. And you know, they let me cry. They let me cry. They loved me till I was able to love myself again, because I had a lot of stuffed feelings and emotions. And I myself grew up in a home where there was active alcoholism. It's not my place to call my dad an alcoholic, but my dad drank a lot. And so I think that's where the low self-esteem and low self-worth and, you know, confidence. And I didn't have any of that and, you know, courage. And I just did the right things. I was one of those kids. I got up in the morning and I went to school and I did my work and I was athletic and I was on the honor roll and I did everything that my parents wanted me to do. I was a rule follower and any given moment, it's really hard for me. I'm a rule follower. And you know, there were one time I said, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to follow the rules. I'm tired of following the rules. And so, you know, that's still really hard for me today. So I continued. Well, but early on that first year of my recovery program, I truly did hang on to that step. And I did get a sponsor, and I did work the steps. And thank you so much. I know you're in here today, and I love you. You know I love you. You know who you are. And so I immediately had to make that decision. You know, what I hung on to was let go and let God. And I had to make a decision because I was ready for a divorce at 6 and a half years of marriage. And I couldn't do it anymore. And I tried, and we had some good times. But I just couldn't do it. Why? Because he told me he loved drinking, and he wasn't going to stop. And I understood that. I understood that. And so I surrendered his desire to drink. And long story short, fast forward, by August, he totaled my car, crashed my car, and got another DUI, and as he said, and he ended up doing some time. He did served some time. And you know what? Thank you, God, that I had all of you. Thank you, God, that I had the 12 steps of Al-Anon, and I had meetings to go to, and I had men and women in rooms that understood where I was coming from. And because what I did is I surrendered him, you know, and I have to tell you, you know, and he knows this, October, November, December, January of 1989 were the best months of my entire life. Because he wasn't here. He wasn't there. You know, I had the kids, and I had my mom, and I lived near my mom, and she took care of the kids. And so, oh, my God. And then when he came, I showed up at my job. As he said, I was at my job 43 years, and I didn't have the same position, but I stayed with the same company. And he came, and he said he was out, and I thought he escaped. Because he'd always talk about that. He'd always talk about escaping. And he was blessed and fortunate to be a trustee at a local sheriff station, you know. And the Covina 502 Club would go and take meetings in there. And I'm so grateful for that because they fed his spirit. They fed his soul just like I was getting fed. And, you know, fast forward, you know, when he came out and said he wanted to get sober and go to meetings, you know, I don't suggest that you do this, anybody who's new, but I was mean. I was mean. I had no compassion. I had no understanding. I didn't care. So you wanted to get sober, and you know, you're good for you. But I couldn't do it anymore. And I kept going to meetings, and they kept telling me not to make any decisions. And I listened to them, and I prayed for him, even though I didn't want to pray for him. And you know what? I'm here to tell you, I'm so grateful because, as he said, you know, we've made it to 40 years, you know, a day at a time. You know, I remember early on in my recovery, again, step three, making a decision that I'm going to be married to a recovering alcoholic for the rest of my life. I couldn't do that. But if you told me that I would do it one day at a time, I could do that. I could say that I'm going to be married to a recovering alcoholic the rest of my life. But you know what I have to tell you? It wasn't about him. You know, I didn't get the fourth step, and that's why I can totally relate to Marshall when he was sharing, because I didn't get that fourth step. But you know what? That's where I realized my part. And I realized that we went into this marriage with a lot of excess baggage. And, you know, one of my sponsors said, what did you really expect to get? All the inheritance? I said, why not? You know, so we've been on a journey. Both of us, we've had our ups and our downs and our health conditions and things that have happened to us. And, you know, thank you so much, Marshall and Anne, for talking about the miracles in your life, because we have had so many. I have lost track of the family miracles that we have had together, along with our adult children and our grandchildren. We're overpaid. It's gone above and beyond. And I never would have thought in my wildest dreams that I ever would have said, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because they gave me Al-Anon. Mm-hmm. And see, I went there before him. You know, and I kept my mouth shut when he was on his marijuana maintenance plan. And they told me it's none of your business. It's none of your business counting his meetings, how many. It's none of your business. Keep your mouth shut. And thank God they told me that, because I would have sabotaged his sobriety and my recovery. And so today we're living a life beyond our wildest dreams. Yes, I am retired finally, and I'm so grateful for that. And I think it was, we did it together, and we talk about things that we're going to do together. We don't just make a decision. You know, we go to our God together. Today we pray together. Today we read excuse me, you guys, but I feel like we're two old people. We get up in the morning, and he has his coffee. I have my hot water with lemon, and then I don't have my coffee yet after that lemon. And then he's in his bedroom, and he's got his books, this stack of books right here, and he's reading, and I'm in the living room, and I got my stack of books, and I got my journal, and I'm it's like, oh my God. But you know what? That's what comes first in our day today. Early on, I told you, 6.5 marriages, I wanted a divorce. But I'm so grateful that I listened to everybody's experience, strength, and hope, because I kept doing that life one day at a time. You know, and even in sobriety, it wasn't always easy. In sobriety, we had our tough times. But 5.5, 6 years of sobriety, he came to me and said he wanted a divorce. And I said to him, it's okay. If I wanted a divorce, I wouldn't expect you to force me to be here. So you want a divorce, you're free to go. It's okay. But I want to thank you for the years of sobriety that you got to share with me. Mm-hmm. Because I have a program far what I ever could have imagined. I have relationships. I have a relationship with God. I know no matter what, I'm going to be okay. So it's okay. Whatever you need to do. That was on a Friday. By Sunday, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what I was doing. I'm crazy. My place is with you here and the kids. And you know, I'm sharing this for the new people, because even in sobriety. And then in 2001, I worked on my steps. I went to all my meetings. I did what I was supposed to do. 2001, I was crazy one more time. Because my son made a decision and a choice to abuse his body. Mm-hmm. And that's his story. Mm-hmm. So I was crazy. I was driving him to the, he knows this now. I was driving him to the connection. I was driving him to pick up who and who and who and give them rides. I was finding these county jail slips, and I was doing all of that. So what did I do? I did what I was taught. I went back to step one. I started working my steps over again, which allowed me to surface my, you know, where I was headed and what I needed to do. And then I came to him and I said, you know what, whatever you say goes. He needs to go to you. I'm done. Unfortunately, at the time for me, my son was pretty bad. And I would rather see my son leave this earth and know that he'd have sobriety in a better place than watch what I was watching here on earth. I could divorce my husband, but I couldn't divorce my kid. So I prayed and I said to God, whatever, thy will be done. I took the risk. See, step three reminds me to make that decision. And what I understand God is, he wants what's best for me, my family, and my adult children, my grandchildren. I trust him today. Today, the will of God for me is trust. I trust him in my journey. I've trusted him this far. He gave me my husband with a new lot in life. He had a heart attack. He had a heart attack November of 2021. Double bypass in December. You know, and we stuck together as a family, as a blood family, as a fellowship family from far and wide. And there were people praying that we didn't even know. And he is with us today. you know. So I made a decision to retire so that I can live a healthy, fun, adventurous life. So we have made a decision to drive, not fly, drive to our next destination. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'll be forever grateful because God will be with me every highway we go. And you know, but I'm not there yet. I'm going to stay in today. Today I'm here at AFG with all you beautiful men and women. The fellowship has just taken our life and our adventure and our journey to a whole new level. And I had no idea. You kept telling me, don't make any decisions. Just wait. Just wait. I'd be on my knees in that cold linoleum floor because I wanted a divorce. But I waited. And I went to meeting after meeting. And Diane, thank you for doing this. It was a little bit nerve-wracking. But I said to my husband, walking in here, you know, honey, the way I see it is we go to meetings. We go to meetings. We go to meetings. We work the steps. We work the steps. We read our literature. We're of service. And we do that every single day. So, choosing my step, and I do have some little cards. I have some quotes on there and just different things, and I have been reading them to get in touch with my higher power. And I didn't know what for or what you were going to pick, but I thought, you know what? Today, I truly believe that God's will and His trust for me is in my heart. And honestly, I am not kidding you guys. I said I was either going to get step 11 or 3. And what did I get? That's God talking. Thank you for letting me go through.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.